It's Rebecca Smith from the KBIA newsroom in Columbia. Hello and welcome to a special edition of Intersection in Missouri Health Talks. Today I'm joined in the studio by Jennifer Carter Dockler, the public policy director for the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, and who also helps facilitate the Missouri Sexual Assault Response Team. Thank you for coming back to Intersection, Jennifer.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
So we're going to be speaking about some of the organizations and individuals who go by somewhat silly-sounding acronyms, but do very important work in the realm of sexual assaults and sexual violence throughout the state. Just as a note, today's show covers some tough topics and may not be appropriate for all members of our audience. So let's go ahead and dive in. But I guess just to remind our audience, the last time, Jennifer, you were here, you actually spoke about your work with the Governor's Committee to End Homelessness. And it just seems like you wear a lot of hats through the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence.
I do.
So we're talking SARTs and SANES today. Those are those silly sounding acronyms. A SART being a sexual assault response team, and a SANE nurse being a sexual assault nurse examiner. That's someone who's specially trained to respond when a victim of a crime, a survivor of a sexual assault, comes into a medical situation. So, Jennifer, tell me a little bit about these groups and tell me about a little bit about your work with them.
Sure. So oftentimes people are thinking about their sexual assault response team as a local initiative, which it's very important that there are local collaborations, the local hospital personnel, the local law enforcement who are doing sexual assault investigations, the local rape crisis center and their staff. Yet there are some states that have created statewide sexual assault response teams, which is what Missouri has followed suit to be able to do, because there's certain issues that as much as a local community can be working to address on their policies and procedures, there may be something that's more of a legislative change or something that's impacting all the communities. And so that's what MCADSV has been facilitating the last couple of years, is what is it that we can do on a statewide level to build a better infrastructure that will trickle down to these local sexual assault response team initiatives, as well as spark more interest, because not every community does have a local sexual assault response team. And again, from a statewide level, we're trying to figure out what are consistent barriers that we can help address using a wide variety of partners and collaborators, because you have all these different roles and perspectives. Like, what the crime lab needs is different than what law enforcement necessarily needs or what the advocate is looking for. So really having all those perspectives together in one space to talk about what are gaps, what are solutions, and how do we come together as a team to really address them so that we're all really bought into that solution.
How long have these sexual assault response teams been in existence throughout the state? I mean, obviously you said the Missouri-wide effort is a little younger, but how long have we been seeing these types of groups trying to mobilize in local communities?
Probably since our first rape crisis center started, and they really started providing hospital advocacy.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. You've mentioned some of the problems that you have seen when you're speaking with these different individuals who run these sexual assault response teams, but a lot of the conversations I've already had on this topic have actually been with these sexual assault nurse examiners. These are these SANE nurses. I was talking to my boss about this, and he thought I meant like SANE versus insane the first time I brought it up. And so I try to make sure I specify now, sexual assault nurse examiners. It seems like many of these nurses are taking some of the leadership roles in these local efforts as the response team units. I've spoken to several who have taken on that role. We're going to listen to a little bit of a conversation I actually gathered with one of these nurse examiners, Dawn Day. She's the sexual assault program coordinator at the Emergency Trauma Center at Mercy Hospital in Springfield. Quite a mouthful of a title. But she's going to talk a little bit about the purpose of a SANE nurse. And I hope after that we can reflect a little bit and talk a little bit about the work that they do.
Sexual assault nursing, I really love doing because it empowers me as a nurse. I like the fact that I am there for the patient. I am taking care of the patient. The program allows us to have one-on-one time together. On average, start to finish, caring for a patient takes about 4 hours. That's what I say. Sometimes I can get done faster. Sometimes it's longer. You have a lot of variables that will play into how long it is. But the longest, and everyone's like, I don't understand why it takes so long. The biggest thing is I tell patients, I know you don't want to be here. I know you want to go home, but my job is to not make you feel rushed, and I'm not going to rush in my job that I do because I'm not going to miss something. The biggest time component that I have to it is getting comfortable with that patient and getting them to understand that they can trust me and building a relationship where they know what's coming, they know what my job is, they know what I need to do. I let them feel comfortable in the room. I make them feel as comfortable as I possibly can before we start talking about what happened. Because I'm not going to just rush in the room and say, go ahead, tell me what happened. Let's go. Get in, get out. Let's go. It's not my job. The most rewarding part that I want to have, I personally have not had in my career yet. I want to take care of a patient, collect evidence that is used in prosecution to put a bad guy behind bars. I, in my career, have not had that yet. In the meantime, I have learned to find another goal. The goal that I take away every day now is knowing that I was there for that patient in their time of need. To attempt to make the situation better. I'm not successful every time at it, but when I can be with a patient in a room and she's distraught and she's crying and I take the time and we go through everything and we're very slow. And when she can walk out of that room and some of them have smiles on their faces, some of them will hug me, they will thank me. And that is all I need, because I walked into the room with them crying and they're walking out of the room with a smile on their face. I'm not saying at all that they are better. I'm not saying at all that the situation is fine. But she walked out of my department in a better mindset than what she walked in. And that's the best thing that I could do for my patients.
So we just heard from Dawn Day. She's a sexual assault nurse examiner in Springfield, and she also is the program coordinator for an entire program of SANE nurses. I'm wondering if you have any reflections about the little piece that we just listened to from Dawn.
One is the way evidence is collected for sexual assault is so different, right? The fact that somebody needs to go to a hospital and that they need this trained nurse examiner, that evidence collection is done very different. So some of the things that we have to consider for our responses to sexual assault have some unique circumstances that we have to be able to troubleshoot and address. In many other types of situations and crimes that are being committed, they're not having to think about where do I go for this evidence collection because of the way it needs to be collected. It's different. And so it is best to be able to go to a hospital or a medical provider to be able to have that collected. And also she touched on what is a realistic goal of that. We've had a very strong position at the Coalition about victim involvement, victim having choices. It's a form of their healing. And so we don't want to discourage victims from going and having a sexual assault kit completed if they think it's going to be a mandated report to law enforcement and starting a criminal justice process, because it is time-sensitive evidence. Although they now recommend you can wait a little bit longer than what they prior thought, it's still time-sensitive. And so the sooner that you can go, the better. Better in terms of collecting evidence. So we don't want someone who's wrestling with, do I want to report or not report, to not go at least have that kit completed and then be able to think about if they want to contact law enforcement or not. So because of that, there are some victims who go, who just having that kit completed makes them feel better, and they may contact law enforcement later and now say, I've got a kit completed, I want to make a formal report. Or they may never want to do that because simply completing that kit made them feel better. The other thing that's very important as part of that evidence collection that, again, is different is before they even start the formal evidence collection, they're doing a medical well-being, medical treatment. They want to make sure that the person is physically okay before starting to collect that evidence. And so, again, sometimes why people are going to the hospital is they want to physically make sure they're okay. They don't know who the assailant was, or they don't know the history. They're concerned about sexually transmitted diseases, or what do I need to do if maybe I'm risked at pregnancy now? They have a lot of health-related concerns because of the nature of this crime. So the entire evidence collection and how it is done is very unique and specialized.
You're listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Rebecca Smith. Today's show is a special from my project, Missouri Health Talks, and we're speaking with Jennifer Carter-Dockler from the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence about the statewide sexual assault response team. As a reminder, today's show deals with some difficult topics and may not be appropriate for all audience members. Before we move into some of the more legislative efforts that are being made through Mozart and through some of these other groups, I want us to listen to one more piece of a conversation I recorded with another sexual assault nurse examiner I actually met recently named Natalie Maupin. She's a sexual assault nurse examiner and the forensic program coordinator at Mosaic Life Care, the hospital in St. Joseph. She spoke about one other issue that she sees arising when she is doing these forensic examinations, when she's working with victims of crimes. And I think this will hopefully help us direct us into some of the efforts you guys are making at the statewide level to improve response and improve outcomes for these victims of sexual assault. So let's listen to Natalie real quick.
The act of the nurse coming in, conducting the exam, like those services, us collecting the exam, the kit, like there's not a charge for that. But like if you did any medications, like STD medications, or if you did lab work to test for anything, even though it's a product of, a result of, because you were sexually assaulted, those are considered medical. So it states like in the statute that they can still be billed for that, and so a lot of times they are. And so there are different things that can come into place to help with that. Like there's a crime victims fund, but it's it can kind of sometimes be hard. It's not like an automatic thing, they got to apply for it, and there's just like a lot of variables to that. So I know that that's something like as a statewide response here, like they're working to try to make that easier and make the rules for that crime victims not so, you know, hard on the patient.
So her comments really get to, again, this nature of the way evidence is collected for a sexual assault is different and leads us to having different responses. So, for example, for many years, sexual assault victims were billed for that evidence collection when they completed a kit, even though they wouldn't have been billed for other types of crime evidence collection. So they can now no longer be billed, but there is a distinction between the kit collection and that medical treatment, which can be challenging because victims sometimes don't know. They're being told, hey, you can go, you're not going to be charged for this. But depending what is viewed as medical treatment, there is the Crime Victims Compensation Fund, yet it is intended to be a payer of last resort. And so that can be challenging if somebody has private insurance, yet they're not. If we're talking about a college student wanting their parents to know why they went into the emergency room. But the intention behind the Crime Victims Compensation Fund is to be a payer of last resort so that due to a crime, especially if someone is low income, that then the financial burden associated with the crime doesn't cause them to spiral into more hardship. But that is, again, something that's different about the way evidence is collected in sexual assault cases, is that it's very challenging at times to separate out what is that medical treatment that needs to be offered as just good patient basic care to a patient, and what victims are concerned about, and having them understand what is considered free and covered as part of our compensation program so that they're not charged for the kit, and then what is it that they would still be responsible for. This is also where an advocate can help them troubleshoot. So for example, if there might be going, maybe not initially at the hospital, but maybe an advocate can help them do follow-up at a local community health center that can also offer some of those things at reduced rate and then not going through their insurance. But it is cumbersome that then you're having to go to multiple places trying to figure this out. But again, the nature of it, the way this crime occurs, is you then have some very serious health concerns for yourself and your overall well-being. We have legislation filed this session that would, quote unquote, modernize our crime victims compensation program. It still would be intended to be a payer of last resort, but it would make it a much easier process for a victim to apply for. So, for example, one of the current requirements is that you have to report to law enforcement within 48 hours. The federal requirements say you have to have made a report, but they don't designate what that looks like. So in the legislation's filed, we're getting rid of a specific time frame because of the nature of these crimes. It can sometimes take different timelines for when people are reporting. And then two, somebody simply completing the sexual assault kit could qualify as a report. Again, a victim in need is not always thinking, if I do this, this will qualify me for this program. They're thinking, hey, I told somebody about what happened to me. So we're trying to make the program in statute operate much more like the real life experience of victims in need and some of the dynamics that make the program sometimes difficult for them to access.
What was the number on that bill again?
There is two on the Senate. It's Senate Bill 966, sponsored by Senator Rowden. And then on the House, it's Representative Dogan.
And have they made it to the floor?
The Senate version just passed yesterday, proud to report. The House version should be voted out of one more committee, their Legislative Oversight Committee, and then hopefully moving forward to the floor. But there's been broad support on the vote on Senate Bill 966. It was 30 yes, 3 no.
You're listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Rebecca Smith. Today's show is a special from my project, Missouri Health Talks, and we're speaking in the studio with Jennifer Carter-Dockler from the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. We're talking about some of the legislative and non-legislative efforts underway to make the response to sexual assaults across the state more uniform, survivor-centric, and efficient. As a reminder, today's show deals with some tough topics and may not be appropriate for everyone. I'm wondering, outside of this Victims of Crime Fund, what are some of the other legislative efforts or just issues that arose through conversations with these sexual assault response teams, perhaps gaps that need to be filled in or parts of this process, right? Like you mentioned, that could be made more efficient. I'm wondering what's come up through these meetings.
Sure. So I'll talk non-legislatively first. So the last couple of years, part of what we've been trying to identify is what are items that do need legislative action and what are items that really our community partners can be going ahead and doing on their own. It doesn't require statute changes. It just involves coming together and creating those changes. So, for example, we had different kits used in the state. We have multiple crime labs. Many people believe that Highway Patrol is our only crime lab. They have three of the crime labs, but there are other crime labs. St. Louis has three crime labs, and then Kansas City has a crime lab. And so we have been trying to coordinate among those crime labs about could we have a shared kit no matter where you are in the state, that at least the kit would be the same. And so those new kits will be rolling out, and Highway Patrol is purchasing them for all these communities. But that was a real collaborative effort about we want to make sure as much as possible that no matter where you're sexually assaulted in the state, that there can be a similar response. It helps in terms of training, so there's not as many regional differences. But that was something that didn't require legislation for them to get together and figure out what is different among the kits that we're using, why are they different, what could we each give or take on so that we could all say we're going to be using the same kit, and then Highway Patrol saying we'll provide that kit. So now we're in a part of how do we promote that kit and make sure people understand why its components are so important. So again, that's something that didn't require legislation. The coalition is also trying to figure out what can we do to promote interest in individuals becoming a sexual assault nurse examiner. We're also working with the Missouri Hospital Association about, you know, we can't mandate that, but what can we do to promote interest? Because it is such a specialized field and the people who get in it are really passionate about it, yet it can also lead to huge turnover. There can be a lot of bad hours, you're seeing some really traumatic cases. So what can we do to help promote interest in that? We don't necessarily need legislation to do that. We need to make sure, how do we have a solid training program? Who are those trainers? How are we promoting it? And how are they hearing from other SANEs why they enjoy having that role? And although most people do focus on nurses, I do want to point out that it's not only nurses who can go through that training. Sometimes we also hear another acronym, SAFE, Sexual Assault Forensic Examiner. So that way, if the person isn't a nurse, it actually could be a physician assistant. It could be a doctor. Primarily, though, especially for the adult exams, we see it is a nurse practitioner. Yet, being mindful, it could be another specialized medical profession who also goes through a similar training and is able to conduct that kit. There's several pieces of legislation this year that have all been filed complementing each other about how we can better address our sexual assault evidence and process in Missouri. So there's two additional bills to the bills looking at our Crime Victims Compensation Fund. There's two additional bills, one by Senator Riddle and another by Representative Lichtenegger, that are looking at establishing protocols and a process for an electronic tracking system of kits. This has been a suggestion that has come to us from victims. Community partners have also said it would be helpful. And what they would do is that, and depending on what system you purchased, would you know, impact what it looks like. But basically, a victim would be able to clearly know, has my kit been picked up from the hospital? Has law enforcement submitted my kit for analysis? If the analysis has been completed, was there a CODIS hit? Is there follow-up? Not only would that be very helpful for a victim to be involved in the process, it's also helpful for community partners who might be working with that victim to say, hey, exactly where is that kit in the process? Also, right now, the Attorney General's office is conducting an audit to know exactly how many kits we have in the state, those that are at hospitals or at law enforcement, those have been submitted for analysis, those that haven't. If we had a tracking system, you can go into that and have like an overall, here's how many kits are in the system. Also, in Senator Rowden's bill and Representative Dogan's bill, they have two other pieces that, in addition to the Crime Victims Compensation Fund, that address setting standards for when kits should be picked up from hospitals and when they should be submitted for analysis. Because right now, our statute is silent on it. Our statute that addresses the forensic exam kits, it's really about the reimbursement process so that hospitals are reimbursed for providing that. So what those bills would do is say when a medical provider has contacted law enforcement has 14 days to pick up those kits. In some communities, it's going to be much quicker than that. But the 14 days is for some of our rural communities where, again, they don't have a hospital within their county border. They might be having to travel. So they only have one or two sheriffs on at a shift. So the 14 days is to allow some flexibility for the rural communities. And then once the law enforcement officer has picked up the kit, they have 14 days to submit to the appropriate crime lab for analysis. And again, that would at least create a bare minimum standard in our state for what a victim could expect versus right now it's community to community what their practice is. There's one additional bill by Representative Corfaith Walker out of St. Louis that clearly says that victims should be notified where their kit is in the process. If there is a CODIS hit, it's very victim-centered in what their rights are and that they should be notified of those rights. So again, each bill does something a little different, but they're really complementing each other.
You're listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Rebecca Smith. Today's show is a special from my project, Missouri Health Talks, and we're speaking with Jennifer Carter-Dockler from the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence about efforts to improve sexual assault response around the state and about making the process less re-traumatizing for survivors. As a reminder, today's show deals with some tough topics and may not be appropriate for everyone. One thing you've brought up through the conversation we've had today that I wanted to follow up on is this idea that we've seen rural hospital closures in the last few years. When we talk about sexual assault response teams, we often are talking about these sexual assault nurse examiners or the sexual assault forensic examiners who are trained and able to do these rape kits, forensic kits, to collect evidence. In a lot of these communities that we have in the state, because there are many that don't have a hospital within their county borders, what exists to support the victims of a sexual assault in those communities? Where can people go to have this type of forensic examination, evidence collection done? Is it find the nearest hospital? What options exist for them?
So a couple. One, if they are already familiar with the Rape Crisis Center, then they could call that community's Rape Crisis Center and find out directly from them what hospitals do they know have a sexual assault nurse examiner currently on staff. If they don't and they go to the hospital, what we are working towards with the hospital association is what is a best practice we can promote that either that hospital does have a sexual assault nurse examiner, or how do they have protocols in place that they know for sure which hospital does, so that then that person isn't going from hospital to hospital to hospital, just like they would do with any other medical condition. When somebody shows up, if they don't have the expertise within their facility, they're going to help connect that person. We're also looking at other creative strategies, because with either of those strategies, you're talking about somebody who's been through a traumatic event who's now having to travel to other communities. So one of our long-term strategies is, although many people think of a hospital as the ideal because it's 24 hours, 7 days a week, so that is best if it's Saturday night at midnight and someone's wanting to complete this, are there local community health centers? Are there other things that we could be promoting that maybe aren't 24 hours a day, but it doesn't then create the transportation barrier? Again, that's a long-term strategy of how can we get folks and other different like health clinics interested in advertising that they have this so that transportation doesn't continue to be a barrier.
Now, I won't keep you much longer, but the last thing that I was hoping we could talk just a little bit about today is about the process of one of these examinations and about, well, we're just going to listen to Natalie speak more eloquently than I am right now about this.
It's not an easy process for them to go through. Sadly, I wish there was a way to make it easier. We try our best. But, I mean, some patients, victims will say sometimes that exam was as hard as the assault itself sometimes. And so I think that can be very helpful for other medical, for law enforcement or different people when they're coming in behind us after we've done that exam, to have a better, you know, a better understanding of that patient might be a little snippy and a little irritable. They just had a real, you know, not only were they just sexually assaulted, but then they had this exam that was really difficult. And when there's reports of like, well, I think they were really just lying or made it up, like, you're not going to lie and make that up and go through this entire exam. You know, the numbers of false reports and lying are very, very minimal. And so that shouldn't be, you know, that misinterpretation or view of the collective whole, you know.
The reason I wanted us to listen to that last bit of conversation from Natalie is she speaks quite eloquently about the process of one of these exams and how it is a difficult process. Through conversations with several sexual assault nurse examiners that I've spoken with, they seem to believe that there's a large misconception in the greater community about, well, sexual assault in general, but also about what goes into this exam. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about those misconceptions.
Sometimes people aren't thinking about the way some of the things that they might have to do for evidence collection, which at any point a victim can say they don't want some part of the kit completed. Every step, when they're saying they want to complete the kit, it doesn't necessarily mean every single step of it, but there's some parts of it that are painful. And then you're in this state of vulnerability. You might be then having to disclose to hospital staff what happened. You're then trying to report as the nurse is documenting as part of the kit different information that they need that's going to be helpful for the crime lab and the analysis. You feel this heightened sense of vulnerability about what has happened. And at a certain point, telling your story can be very helpful and healing. And at a certain point, it becomes very overwhelming and frustrating. And sometimes even trying to explain the different roles and why people might be asking different questions. Sometimes a victim might not understand if law enforcement is involved. Why are they asking these questions? There can be heightened awareness about, are they implying that it was my fault? And this can also be, how is law enforcement prefacing why they're about to ask these questions? It can be a very legitimate question about what were you wearing, because they now know those clothes are part of evidence collection and they're wanting to be able to say, hey, this person clearly told me the clothing articles that they have, but they want to be very clear when they're asking that. I'm not asking that implying that what you were wearing contributed, but I want to be able to match up, hey, you know what was in that bag that was just collected. They're trying to establish corroboration between the story and the evidence that was collected to help their case.
Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for sitting down with me today to talk sexual assault response teams, both the local efforts and statewide effort you're involved in, and also a little bit about sexual assault nurse examiners. This has been a 30-minute special from Missouri Health Talks. You can go online to kbia.org or missourihealthtalks.org to hear more conversations about sexual and domestic violence and the voices of individuals who work in this field throughout the state. I'm Rebecca Smith, and our music is Montana Skies. Thanks so much for listening.